Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. There are many ways to preserve stories of Latinidad, of family, of history, of culture. One way to preserve those stories is in stories. San Antonio's Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center was founded by Chicano and Chicana artists to reflect the experiences of San Antonio. Centered in San Antonio's historic Mexican-American West Side, the Guadalupe has promoted art and culture through various types of programming, music, dance, education, and theater. The Guadalupe's Teatro Salon Table Reading Series, under theater director Jorge Piña, was founded to give local playwrights an opportunity to share their works that reflect the Latinx, Chicano-Chicana, and Tejano experience. Playwrights were invited to submit scripts of their unproduced plays for a reading in an intimate, informal setting. Three scripts were selected for this year's series. Las Comadres de Morales Street by Irene Chavez centers on the strong women elders and other characters of Westside San Antonio and how they coped with the pandemic, gentrification, and disinvestment. Amalia Ortiz wrote Pass It On, a middle-class family of Chicanas living on the borderlands who see their lives go into a tailspin because of a chain letter. Patricia Zamora's El Monstruo, a play with music, follows families devastated by the deadly 1921 flood that killed at least 80 people, most on the city's poor Mexican-American near West Side. Las Comadres and Pass It On received their readings in November. El Monstruo is presented this weekend. El Monstruo is one of Zamora's more recent works. Amalia Ortiz's Pass It On has gone through many transmutations over the years. Irene Chavez is newer to the process. She explains why she was inspired to submit Las Comadres de Morales Street.
I remember a dear friend of mine had recently passed away, and one of the last conversations we had was like, isn't there something you've been meaning to do? And I said, yeah, you know, one day I'm going to write a play. And so her death really spurred me to, I had a bit of an existential crisis at the time, and I was like, what am I doing? And think about the stories that we have of our families, and so I just felt called. So I wrote it, and I thought, great, I'll submit it, and if nothing else, I'll get free tickets to the show. And then they chose it, and it was called Las Cochinas Christmas, and it was just my introduction to theater here. And the Guadalupe has such a history of supporting Latino artists and just being this beacon of our gente, right, of our stories, nuestras historias, all that. And so I was really grateful for that. And so fast forward, you know, life happens. And then I was chosen for this Artist at Work Fellowship, where I was able to combine the work that I was doing at Seniors in Play, which is a nonprofit organization that's led by Tony Plana, and really focus on our elders who were telling their stories, and often for the first time, right? They were able to be creative. They're able to develop their own monologues and tell their own stories. And so I was inspired by their stories and the interactions that I had with that group. Got the fellowship, and then for a year cultivated in Las Comadres de Morales Street. You rewrite and rewrite, and you get the story to a place where it's ready for an audience, and you want to see that reaction. You want to see, do the jokes hit? Does the material work? Are people reacting to the characters that you've been creating, that have been living inside your head, that now these wonderful actors get to bring to life and give their own taste to? So it's been a culmination of about 2 years of work. Thankfully, I had been working with Teatro Aldez in their Nuestras Historias project, so I got a little bit of workshopping there. But during the summer, I had a bit of transition where I was like, I'm going to rewrite the last two scenes. And I submitted it, and thankfully, you know, the reading was a few weeks ago, and I was very, very happy and in complete gratitude for the audience and their reaction and for their feedback.
So going to sort of the process of getting ready for the readings, Patricia, have you already been able to sit with the actors who will be portraying the characters in your work?
Yes. Something unique about it is that it is a play with music. So there are six original songs. So to prepare the actors for the music, we had to cast early and meet ahead of time to ensure that they were familiar with their parts and with the music.
Well, tell us what Monstruo's about.
El Monstruo is about the flood of 1921 that really decimated downtown San Antonio. But Moreover, there was more destruction on the west side of San Antonio because it's a marginalized community, has been, still is. There's two parts to it. The first part takes place in 1921, and the second part takes place in 1974 during the Chicano activism movements that really, really propelled some funding to improve the infrastructure on the west side.
So it's been over 100 years since that flood. Are the people who are taking part in these readings, do they have any maybe historic connection to that play? Because the West Side is so generational. Even if they maybe don't live in that particular neighborhood, they still have ties to it.
Well, the actors come from all over San Antonio. Some of them are not originally from this area, but all of them were like, I didn't know about this. And even when I share the show and what it's about with people from San Antonio, they're like, I had no idea. So it was really that 100-year commemoration in 2021 that was the spark for me to start writing about it. And as I talk to folks, either they say they do have a connection, like I went to a convention this summer for musical theater writers, and one of the other playwrights said, my grandfather remembers that flood, and he tells me a story about that flood all the time. He said he remembers looking in his backyard and seeing a book floating in the water, and he picked it up, and it was a Bible. I haven't included that in the play, but I thought that that was a really beautiful story. So I have those types of connections with people that I talk to and others that don't know anything about it.
Well, Amalia, your work is very prolific musically, poetically, on the stage. Tell us a little bit about your process in writing the piece that you created for this reading.
So the play that was read in this reading is called Pass It On, and it's over 10 years old. I believe the first draft was finished in, well, is it 2014? In graduate school, I took a playwriting class, and it was an assignment, write a one-act play, any genre, any topic, because I write a lot of political work. I wanted to do the opposite of that and write something lighthearted and fun, and I wrote the first draft of one act. Regardless of the feedback, the next assignment was now make it into a two-act. And so I did that with the same play. And then the next assignment was switch genres. Same play, same characters, switch genres. And mine was a comedy. So at that point, specifically the professor said, try to make it a horror because it's a comedy about a chain letter. And so like, okay, I could see how people have superstitions about chain letters. So then I wrote a smaller one act about a chain letter, making it a horror. And so for this version, because I really did like the one act horror version of it, it's like, can I incorporate that? And so the show begins with an abuela in Mexico telling the story of a chain letter as a horror to scare the children. And then that's like the shadow that this family grows up into. It's called Pass It On. So it's about the chain letter, but also the superstitions, the traditions, the physical items. There's this chicken bowl that's passed on, what we pass on, leading into a modern family grappling with their superstitions surrounding a chain letter.
So you already had the reading, and so there is an opportunity for audience Q&A afterwards and audience input. What did you hear from the people who got to see this production, or the reading, I should say?
So as Irene said, you know, it's validating when you hear someone laugh. It's like, I wrote this joke, will it land? And then when you hear people laugh, will they connect to the characters? I mean, it's a comedy, so it's a little outlandish, you know, it's like, what will people think if I have a character who the least, I think, expected character becomes a nun? And like, is that believable? So there was discussion about that. I think as a writer, my fear is that there's a lot of reading and talking about a letter. And, you know, in film, that would be like voiceover, and there'd be a montage of images to keep the audience engaged. In theater, we ask more of audiences. Can you sit and listen to a conversation or sit and listen to someone read on stage? And so that was like one of the questions I had. It was like, there's lots of talk about this letter and reading letters. Do I lose you at any point? And audience members were like, no, it was still interesting and we still followed it. And so that was important for me because I feel like in every version, it's like, I need to edit the letter. I need to make it smaller. That fear of, will the audience sit there and listen to someone read a letter or write a letter?
Well, Irene, what was your experience in hearing the audience feedback to your play about the comadres?
The feedback was great. I think the reactions when I was standing in the back very nervously, I didn't sit for much of my reading. Like, I was really wanting to see how people were going to react. I was watching the audience while they were watching the actors, really, is what was happening. There is a character, Don Julio, who is an Edgewood veteran survivor, and he's based on a real-life person that I've met whose name is Juan. And Juan actually came to the reading, and I was gauging his, because he had never seen the play. We had several discussions and conversations, and so the character or the a lot of the history is wrapped up into Don Julio from his personal experience.
Well, we'll back up and give us that background on the Edgewood survivor. Some people might not understand what you're referencing.
So wonderfully, I was able to work with a lot of different groups and organizations through Seniors in Play. And so one of them was the Edgewood ISD Veterans Group, which is a wonderful group of gentlemen who are veterans of different wars, but particularly the Vietnam War. And when I was at a breakfast with them, I met Juan, and he told me the history, which is in no history book in Texas, which is they had the largest sacrifice of any school district in the nation. So already we know that Latinos were disproportionately drafted into that war. And then when you think about the lives lost, Edgewood gave the most and sacrificed. And so I thought, my God, why don't we talk about that? And so that was part of the inspiration for the character of Don Julio. And that representation is about survivor's guilt and then surviving COVID, right? And then also this aspect of second chances, because he finds love with Doña Carmen. And so it tells you that we're all going through different things, but there's a historical reference for that war and the significance of this community that gave so much and lost brothers and cousins and just loved ones into that war. And so Juan was able to be there, and it was really great to see his reaction. And at the end of it, he came over and he was very emotional. And I said, did I do justice? And he said, yeah, you hit it right on the head, Irene. Good job. And so that's all the validation I needed, right? It's like, you can love all the characters, but that one particularly is special, because it also represents, like, I have an uncle who is in Vietnam. I think we all have different family members, but it's that bit of an emphasis of the lost history within our community that, you know, to Patricia's point, most people don't know, don't realize, it's not written anywhere, it's not taught. And so what a wonderful platform as artists that we have to tell those stories and celebrate them and not ram it down anyone's throat, right? It's really subtle. It's storytelling in a way that people can receive it. And it's a reflection, too, of, like, I think about Amalia's characters and how beautiful it is to see our own tías and our sisters reflected into those stories and the chain letter, right? It's simple, but it's such a beautiful thing. And this is what was said in my reading. A woman stood up and said, I cried and I realized that is me. That is my family. Those stories that you're telling, I'm seeing them. And we need to have more of that.
We're talking today with Irene Chavez, Amalia Ortiz, and Patricia Zamora. Chavez is a playwright, poet, and actor, and a 2022 Fellow of Artists at Work, a San Antonio initiative that fosters skills and creative thinking for a more equitable and inclusive community. Ortiz is a spoken word artist, playwright, poet, actor, and musician. She's appeared on HBO's Russell Simmons Presents Deaf Poetry, the NAACP Image Awards, and various other platforms. Zamora is an actor, playwright, and screenwriter. The works of these three playwrights were selected for the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center's Teatro Salon Table Reading Series. When we come back, it's a victory to present a play before an audience, even in an unstaged reading, but it left Irene Chavez wanting more.
It's funny because I've started writing some other things, but I don't feel like I can do justice to the other pieces until this one's on a stage.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Aspiring and established playwrights may have portfolios full of scripts and screenplays. Not all will make their way to a stage. It's often enough just to get the opportunity to have an audience sit in on a reading. That's what the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center has done with its Teatro Salon Table Reading Series. A call went out to local playwrights for unpublished full-length scripts that focused on the Latino experience. Three were selected for readings this fall. Playwright, actor, musician, and poet Amalia Ortiz submitted the work Pass It On, about the legacy of a chain letter. Playwright, poet, and actor Irene Chavez submitted Las Comadres de Morales Street, which follows the lives of a group of San Antonio West Side elders. Actor, playwright, and screenwriter Patricia Zamora submitted El Monstruo, a play with music that follows the aftermath of a deadly real-life flood that killed dozens of West Side residents. Staged theater readings have similar challenges that we face in radio. We have to paint a picture with words. I ask Patricia Zamora whether some meaning might get lost in a staged reading without actors moving on stage or some kind of visual aspect.
Yes. Yes and no, because we do our best. There are certain elements of a staged reading that are different from a fully staged production. So in a staged reading, you have a staged directions reader. And so that person will read, he walks over to whichever and holds up the key or whichever it is. And so you have an idea, and in your mind, you really have to be in that world. But oftentimes we are. Our audiences go along right with us for that journey. So we have that stage direction reader that helps create and paint that picture. It is a little bit different, but audiences, I think, love it.
I mentioned the first scene where I have a grandmother character telling a scary story, and in the script I have actors act out the story in shadow. So, of course, that didn't happen. So, you know, as a writer, I'm like, leap of faith that the audience can sit and listen to a story without these images. So that's, you know, theatrical device that, you know, in a finished version of the play, I would like to see happen, but in this version it didn't happen. But I think also in later scenes, I see space for physical comedy where there is a comical limpia happening when people are reacting to superstition, that I see physical actors. And so that didn't happen. It's like, and it just says someone pulls out holy water out of their purse and they sprinkle it on a computer. But I could see in my mind's eye it being a bigger thing than someone reading stage directions. But for this version, you know, it's enough to hear chuckles and understand that even the idea of someone doing a limpia on a computer, you can imagine that, and that's funny. I think, you know, obviously in a fully staged version, I would want the director to make the most out of that physically.
And what about you, Irene? Did you encounter maybe any challenges in doing that presentation of only words as opposed to having any sort of scenery around you?
Well, the good part of the technical piece was that we were able to do some projections. So there were some pictures of the West Side that were relevant, like Morales Street, because there's an actual Morales Street on the West Side. And there's also a Morales Street where I grew up in Corpus Christi. So it's a dual purpose. So we were able to project that. And then each of my scenes starts with a song. And so we had the royal jesters. We had, gosh, Solamente Una Vez with Los Panchos. We had, there's a climax with the Ramon Ayala song. And so we utilized music as an element. And it's been really great to see the reaction, because music and just those visuals were enough to get the feel and the spirit of the play. So I was really pleased. Now, again, I think, you know, expanding it, allowing, like the last scene is the angel of death walking through the crowd at a wedding. And so I think there's a build when the actors can actually walk through and react and take their time. And so obviously I'd love to see it expanded, but I really feel that the audience got a good understanding of where we wanted to go with the pieces. And I think it really pushed them to utilize their imagination in ways that you don't often have, right? So television and film and all these other things and these mediums, theater is just something that I think requires a different attention, and it's more intimate. And so I think that's one of the reasons we all love it so much.
It's one thing to have a playwright have a script in front of them and they're holding on to that script with that dream of it finally coming to fruition on stage, but that doesn't always happen. I am curious as to whether maybe your works are going to eventually be performed. Patricia, have you had any feedback yet on
Well, that? I'm definitely in the developmental stage for this. It's received one little reading, and I'm still working on it. I'm looking for the reading to help inform any changes and tweaks and additional song and story elements that I need to write. Of course. I mean, it's a gift if somebody just reads your play. You're like, please read my play. So the fact that it was selected along with these other two fabulous plays, I mean, is an absolute, absolute gift. Yes, of course, there are hopes and dreams of staging. I believe all of that happens at the right time and at the right place.
What about you, Amalia? Have you had any feedback as to whether maybe this might come to fruition on stage?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was very, very fortunate to do a reading of, I wrote a play, Carmen de la Calle, and I did the first reading there at the Guadalupe in around like 2012, and there was someone in the audience who immediately was like, who's going to produce this? I'm like, could be you. And that person who asked the question actually went on to produce it. So like immediately after, I had a couple of people ask, and because it is a very simple story, but there were people who were like, oh, we could totally work this into our season. So there are discussions being had about future productions.
And what about you, Irene?
I would love to see this produced. I've been thinking that if it's not chosen by the Guadalupe, because I know one of ours will be chosen for the spring as a production, I'm willing to go and utilize, you know, leverage my own resources to make sure that this happens, because again, it's been like a culmination of 2 years, so I feel like I have to give birth to this baby in order to get other. I can't. It's funny because I've started writing some other things, but I don't feel like I can do justice to the other pieces until this one's on the stage, right? So that has to be my priority, is to get it where it needs to be. I will say that there are different places that I would love to see it, but I think the reality is, as playwrights, is that we're often limited if we don't have support, strong enough support from other organizations or from other theaters. And so often it is a long process. And I'm really hopeful that I can see this through, basically.
So as far as the themes of sort of your overall product, Patricia, what is the sort of the central running theme through all of your works?
This is different, this play that I'm writing, or now, El Monstruo, because this is my political play. There are themes of social justice, racism, redlining, slow violence, those things. And I normally write comedies. But I would have to say, if I look at all of my works, I definitely want to celebrate our culture and our people. And I would say that that's a common theme in my writing.
And Amalia, nobody's accusing you of being political at all.
No, I mentioned somebody like, oh, they asked what the play was about. I'm like, it's a light comedy. And they're like that. They were kind of shocked. But because I write, everything I write is about social justice. And this being an assignment from a graduate course, I still see strong themes of feminism in it. It's all women. I did that on purpose. And there's only one discussion of a man, but that's, you know, straight
out. The Bechdel test right there.
Straight out of my life, seeing women, strong women holding down households and acting and interacting every day, taking care of each other, nurturing each other, loving each other, and not missing that male presence when it is not there. And that's definitely in this play.
Irene, is there sort of a central theme that runs through the pieces you produce?
I'd say that the theme is really about family. And so for me, at least with the pieces that I've written, the women are always the focal point. They're the leads. And the friendship tends to be a recurring theme for me. So like the first plays I wrote were about these three girls that go to school and come back and the strong bond of friendship that they have. And the same with the comadres, it's the same. It's the friendship and relying on another person and relating to them and being very open, and just the fuerza de mujer, right? It's just like the power of a woman and what we're able to overcome and what we're able to do. I think the other aspect is about the sense of community. So sometimes it's the community you build between, you know, neighbors. Sometimes it's within the school that you're at. But that sense of being present in community, I think, is always at the center of the work that I do.
Irene Chavez, Amalia Ortiz, and Patricia Zamora are playwrights whose works were selected for the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center's Teatro Salon Table Reading Series. Chavez's Las Comadres de Morales Street and Ortiz's Pass It On received their table readings in November. Zamora's El Monstruo, a play with music, will be presented Saturday, December 21st at 3 p.m. at the Guadalupe Latino Bookstore at 1300 Guadalupe Street in San Antonio's Near West Side. An audience Q&A follows. See photos from the November readings at tpr.org. Thanks for listening to us today on Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.